Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A company in Wisconsin gained attention this week after they gave all of their employees handguns as Christmas presents. Well, that is appalling. They gave out Christmas presents before Thanksgiving.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth interviews author David Sedaris. Plus, as a special treat for the Late Night podcast, David reads a short essay from his new book, Calypso. But first, Seth takes a closer look at the news.
President Trump is in a post-election funk as the blue wave that put Democrats in charge of the House keeps getting bigger. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. As bad as things looked for Republicans going into last week's midterms, Trump himself was apparently optimistic on election night. Vanity Fair reported that about 100 friends and allies gathered at the White House for a party to watch the midterm election results. Trump was in high spirits as the first polls closed, thinking that perhaps he defied the laws of political gravity once again. His mood was great, one Republican who spoke what Trump said, but that was before everything went bad. And you do not want to be at a party with Donald Trump when things go bad. I bet Trump's the kind of guy who would start the night at the blender, making margaritas and singing Cardi B, and at the end of the night, crying in the bathtub, eating burgers with the wrapper still on.
Why can't you vote hamburger?
Of course, early on, it seemed like Trump might have good reason to be in high spirits because the narrative about what was happening got set very early by the media, which declared unequivocally that the election was definitely not a blue wave.
When you look at what's going on here tonight, this is not a blue wave.
This is not a blue wave.
It is not a blue wave.
It's nothing like a blue wave or a tidal wave.
Right.
It's not a blue wave.
So we haven't seen the blue wave.
There is not a blue wave.
That was like 2 hours in. Can you imagine if these guys had been calling the 1980 Olympics?
Do you believe in miracles? No.
The media rushed to set a narrative before most of the results were actually in, but now, in the weeks since the election, it's become clear that this was, in fact, a blue wave. In fact, just to give you an idea of how wrong the media narrative turned out to be, take South Carolina, a deep red state Trump won by 14 points. Trump intervened in the GOP primary for a South Carolina congressional seat to campaign against the sitting Republican Mark Sanford, a Trump critic. Sanford famously had an affair while he was governor, and when he disappeared, his initial excuse was that he was hiking the Appalachian Trail. Trump repeatedly mocked Sanford for that, but got the name wrong.
Never liked him too much. I wasn't a big fan. The Tallahassee Trail must be a beautiful place. Unfortunately, he didn't go there.
No, he didn't, because there's no such thing. Tallahassee Trail sounds like something you'd see on the price list at a Florida waxing salon. So Trump helped push Sanford out in favor of Katie Arrington, a Republican who ran as a staunch Trump ally. Now remember, this is a seat that has been held by Republicans since the 80s. Let's see how Trump's hand-picked Republican candidate did.
The Democratic candidate Joe Cunningham defeated Republican Katie Arrington.
It's a surprising upset in a district that favored President Trump by double digits in 2016, and it's a seat held by a Republican for four decades.
Damn! No wonder Trump's depressed. When he heard that, he probably stormed out of the White House screaming, "If anyone needs me, I'll be hiking the Tallahatchie Trail!" Trump couldn't even get a close ally elected in a district that's been held by Republicans for four decades in a deep red state he won by 14 points. And as the reality of the blue wave has come into focus over the last week, Trump has apparently been in a post-election funk. One administration official said the president has lashed out at several aides, from junior press assistants to senior officials. He's also fighting with American allies, like French President Emmanuel Macron. For 2 years, Trump has been desperate to be Macron's friend, at one point even brushing dandruff off of his shoulder.
We do have a very special relationship. In fact, I'll get that little piece of dandruff for him. We have to make him perfect. He is perfect.
Dude, play it cool. You can tell Trump has never had adult friends. Because as soon as he finds one, he starts grooming him like a capuchin monkey. Do you want to eat a bug from my hair? Well, after the midterms, their budding romance immediately started to cool off when an angry and sullen Trump decided to lash out at France over trade, specifically targeting one of France's most iconic exports.
This is what he said. He said, on trade, France makes excellent wine, but so does the U.S. The problem is that France makes it very hard for the U.S. to sell its wines into France and charges big tariffs, whereas the U.S. makes it easy for French wines and charges very small tariffs. Not fair, must change.
Not fair, must change. You know, it's very hard to come off as an expert on wine when you talk like Frankenstein. Aroma good. Body full. Fire bad. Dude, you're picking a fight with France over wine? We have no chance. One of their most famous wines is a Bordeaux called Grand Cru Classé, made by a vineyard called the Château Latour. One of our most famous wines is a box with a spout sticking out of it. Why is Trump lashing out at everyone? Well, in particular, that he's doing... Sorry. So why is Trump lashing out at everyone? Question mark. Wally just pointed at the question mark for me. Wally, you want to bring the card around and show everybody how squeezed up that question mark is? Show him. Come on, Wally. Bring me the card. Come on. You're wondering why I got that wrong. Look at Wally. Look where Wally put that question mark. Just use another card. So why is Trump lashing out at everyone? In your defense, Wally, the why should have given it away as well. Well, in particular, he's depressed over the prospect that Democrats will now use their subpoena power in the House to investigate everything from his tax returns to his bank records. He spent 2 years making enemies in the Democratic caucus, and now those enemies will have tremendous power. Just take California Congresswoman Maxine Waters, who has been the subject of Trump's racist insults for months, and especially in the closing days of the election.
I watch this Maxine Waters. You ever see Maxine Waters? A low IQ individual. Low IQ.
Many of these Democrat politicians who are really disciples of a very low IQ person, Maxine Waters. Your new de facto leader of the Democrat Party, the legendary Maxine Waters.
Legendary? Leave it to Trump to think he's insulting someone by giving them a kick-ass nickname. The legendary Maxine Waters sounds like something Angela Bassett would win an Oscar for. Trump decided to spend 2 years making Maxine Waters his arch nemesis, and now it looks like that decision has come back to bite him. But, I mean, really, how bad could it be? What's the worst that Maxine Waters could do to Trump?
Maxine Waters, who won re-election Tuesday, will likely take over as the chairperson of the House Financial Services Committee. Waters, a vocal critic of Trump, could have power to subpoena the president's tax returns.
Damn. She can subpoena his tax returns, his bank records. Hell, she can subpoena the results of his IQ test. Trump has probably been calling her every day for a week like a sleazy Hollywood agent trying to make it up with a client.
Maxine, baby, this is all one big misunderstanding. When I said low IQ, I meant high IQ. And when I said IQ, I meant iconic queen. You are an iconic queen. Slay. Slay, queen, slay. Please don't subpoena my tax returns.
But as much focus as there is on investigating Trump, one of the keys to the Democrats' success is that they ran on an agenda focused on issues like health care. And now they'll have the power to pass bills in the House, like Medicare for All, and force Republicans to take positions on them. And that is right-wing Fox News pundits like Laura Ingraham freaking out.
Fresh-faced congressional members descended on the Capitol for orientation today. Congresswoman-elect Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Pressley, and Ocasio-Cortez, they represent some of the most radical views in Congress. Free college for all, free health care for all, the abolishment of ICE, a Green New Deal where the U.S. depends entirely on renewable energy.
Wait, they're trying to scare us with free health care? You know an idea is popular when even Fox News can't make it sound bad. What's next? These radical socialists are proposing crazy new ideas like free pizza, a trunk full of gold, Hamilton tickets, a kiss from Ryan Gosling. Trump knows that he'll be held accountable for his actions for the first time in 2 years, and as a result, he's panicking. A week after the midterms, it's clear that we saw a blue wave and a national repudiation of his presidency, with Democrats winning everywhere from the coasts to the Midwest to the
Tallahassee trip.
This has been a closer look. Our guest is a very funny New York Times best-selling author. His latest book, Calypso, is available now. Please welcome to the show the great David Sedaris, everyone. Hello!
Hello, thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you. I want to talk about something you write about in your book. You write about your passion for picking up garbage.
Well, because I live in England now.
Yeah.
And I didn't notice it in London so much, but then we moved to West Sussex in a little village, and it's in the South Downs National Park. And so the downs are like these massive hills that are so green they make your eyes ache. And we live on a narrow one-lane road, and so if two cars are coming, one has to pull off in like a cottage. It looks like a storybook, but people throw everything out the car window. Everything. You finish with that newspaper, throw it out the window. Coffee cup, throw it out the window. Sandwich, throw it out the window. And when I moved there, I wrote and I said, is there a parade? Like, I couldn't conceive. So I had a meeting and was proposing a bunch of things, and they said, no, we can't. So I just thought, okay, fine, I'll do it. So it's like an 8-hour-a-day job.
Uh-huh.
And I have an outfit, and I pick up trash for 8 hours a day.
And you've written that it's actually not that bad. You listen to podcasts,
I just think of it as my job. But people see me and they just think that I'm crazy. I mean, they, if I come upon a family, they pull their children close. They.
Yeah, because usually people, in order to do what you're doing, have had to have committed a crime.
Right. No, a lot of people think that I'm a felon, and I have a grabber, and I have... Yeah. I mean, when I say I have an outfit, like, they want me to wear this reflective, but I'm not.
Yeah.
It's more like a hobo outfit that I wear, like, with big patches, like a Broadway... If there was a Broadway play called Hobo, that's what I'm dressed like.
But now, this is not going unnoticed. They actually, I guess the town, is it the town that gave you, bestowed this honor? They named a garbage truck after you.
Yeah.
This is true. This is the Pigpen Sedaris garbage truck.
Well, because... well, they were going to put my name on it, and I thought, well, Sedaris on a garbage truck just wouldn't make sense. And I don't really have a nickname. I always wanted one, and you can't really give yourself one. So I thought, okay, Pigwin, so it would just have a pig on it and it would make it a little bit better.
These, by the way, these couldn't look more like what I picture British women who come to this kind of ceremony. Everything.
Well, the local paper did an article about it. And the article was just like, local man picks up trash. Uh-huh. And then someone in America saw it and said, don't you know who this is? And so they rewrote it. But it doesn't matter that I'm an author. It doesn't really matter.
No, that's not what this is about.
No.
Now, I have to ask, in your trash picking up, have you seen that newspaper article on the ground yet? Because that would really, that's like circle of life right there. You actually were invited to speak to the House of Commons based on your trash proclivities.
I testified to the House of Commons
about litter. What did you testify about? Just litter?
Well, it was me and the head of the tobacco manufacturers and a woman who owns like 8 McDonald's franchises. And when it was my turn, I just said, I'm nobody. I just pick up rubbish and here's what I pick up and here's what I notice. But it never occurred to me that anyone would be before litter.
Uh-huh.
But one of the MPs was just so Mr. Sedaris. Like, oh, maybe he said, Mr. Sedaris, as if, like, that's not really my name. You live in Horsham, a very wealthy part of the country. So tell me, sir, is somebody throwing a can out their car window the biggest problem you have down there? I'm just not used to being talked to that way, you know?
Sure.
And I was just flustered. But for the rest of my life, I'll resent saying, I'll be mad at myself for not saying, oh, God, no, 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 no. The biggest problem is your mother's whoring. Can you imagine? Like, what was they? What would they do?
I think if you said that, you'd be back in the newspaper.
But who is for
who's
trash?
For litter?
Who is for it?
I want to ask about this. I know you do a lot of book signings. And because of that, you write about personal things and... Because you narrate a lot of you read a lot of your work, so I feel as though people might feel like they know you even more than they do, obviously more than they do, but are people personal with you? Do they tell you personal things when they come to your book signings?
Oh, I invite it. I mean, I would never, when I go and get a book signed, I stand in line and I think, what am I gonna say? And so I wanna take that away from people. So I just ask them a question or, you know, sometimes, like I was in Germany recently, so I would say, when was the last time you saw your parents naked? And if you ask that in America, people will say, I don't know, like I was 6 months old. And in Germany, they say, what's today? they just walk around the house naked all the time.
You were in Norway? You're known worldwide. How was your trip to Norway?
Norway is, it's staggering how beautiful it is.
Yes, it is.
But so you've been?
I have, yeah.
But you go to the country. You could be in the country, and then you get 3 sandwiches and a cup of coffee, and it's $100. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. It's like my friend David Rakoff used to say, it's like your weight on Mars. You know, like if you went to Mars, they would say, well, you might be 163 pounds here, but on Mars, you would weigh 700 tons. So that's what the prices are like in Norway. But we went to this restaurant in Norway, and they had, it said smoked whale, served with ecological sour cream. So it's like bad news about the whale, but really good news about the cow.
Have people asked you to personalize writing when they sign the books? What's the strangest thing people have asked you to do with their book signing?
I mean, sometimes people say, I mean, this must happen to you. I keep laughing, and it's like, I would never put that in my own. Because that makes it sound like I think my book is funny. I'm not going to do that. But this woman came up recently and she said, my daughter has been awful to me for years and I want you to write something so when I die, she'll find it in the book and feel really bad. So she said, I want you to write, dear Barbara, I'm sorry Claire has been so awful to you. And I wasn't going to write that. So I wrote, dear Barbara, your story about the infant son you put up for adoption all those years ago touched my heart. That's That's how you destroy your daughter. You know, like,
did you, now what is, did some, did, what did someone tell you about, I know there's a story, someone told you something about a pug, their pug?
Oh, okay.
How did it come
I was
about?
Signing books, and this woman, I don't know how it started, but this woman, so her pug had an operation on its eye, mm-hmm. and so it had a cone around its neck. And so it just wouldn't shut up about the cone and was whining. And so she took the cone off, and the dog scratched at its eye, and its eye popped out of its head, and he ate it. Okay. So somebody told me that story at a book signing, and then I repeated it the next night. And this woman said, well, she said she was a psychiatrist with the prison system in New Mexico, and a prisoner dug both his eyes out with a teaspoon, and he ate the first one, but he couldn't find the second one. Okay?
That's like a fable.
And then I met somebody else who it was, but he was a crazy person, and he.
Oh, was he?
He said there was a. No, this was another person.
Okay, gotcha.
But he said he thought there was a camera behind his eye.
Oh,
so
gotcha.
He dug his eyes out.
All right. I would say in the end, the pug's the one that's the most easy to understand. Yeah.
Well, that just is such a dog. I mean, I'm not a dog person, but.
Yeah. That's a good argument why not to be.
A dog would eat its own eye.
Yeah.
A dog would think, oh gosh, I'm blind, but. It's a snack,
yeah.
I guess.
I cannot thank you enough for being here. Please come back.
Oh, I would love to.
David Sedaris, everybody. Calypso is available now.
This is David Sedaris, and I'm going to read a short essay from my book, Calypso, and it's called The Ones Who Got Away. It was a Friday night in mid-July, around 9 o'clock, and Hugh and I were at the dinner table, eating this spaghetti he makes with sausage in it. We'd been together for almost 3 decades, and for some reason, I'd waited until this moment to ask how many people he'd slept with before we became a couple. Hugh looked at the ceiling, which is crisscrossed with beams and, to my great consternation, spider webs. I'm vigilant, really, I am, but out in the country, there's no keeping up with them. So, I said, I'm thinking, he told me. I used to know how many people I'd slept with. After meeting Hugh, though, I took myself off the market, and the figure faded from memory. If I were to slog through all my old diaries, I could certainly retrieve it, 28, 30. Do I include those early gropings? They felt significant at the time, but do they qualify as sex if you never took your clothes off or actually touched anything with your bare hands? I wanted to ask Hugh, but he was too busy counting. 32, 33. I put down my fork. You're not finished yet? Shh, he said. You're making me lose track. It shouldn't have surprised me. When you look like Hugh, all you have to do is leave the house and people will approach you, especially gay men, the dogs. His handsomeness was never my personal opinion. Rather, like the roundness of the earth, it is something society generally agrees upon. Without my face to use as bait, I had to work a lot harder than he did. There are times, I'll admit, when I had to beg. That said, some of Hugh's earlier choices seemed poorly thought out to me, especially once AIDS came along. 35, 36. Every man ticked off on his fingers was someone I'd been compared to at one point or another. Not overtly, he's anything but cruel. But surely it happened. Someone kissed better than I did. Someone had more stamina. A more seductive voice, bigger muscles. I'm confident enough to compete against a dozen of his exes, but he was moving on to the population of a small town, 38, 39. By what miracle had neither of us contracted AIDS? How had we gotten away? I don't just mean later when people knew to be safe, but back in the days when it didn't have a name and no one understood how it spread. One of the men Hugh had lived with, a professor he had his first year of college, had died of it in the late 80s, and surely there were others on both my side and his. Yet, for some reason, we'd escaped, had prospered even. Now, here we were, the shadows lengthening, our spaghetti growing cold, as he hit the 50 mark, then blithely sailed beyond it. Whore.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers?
Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.